You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. In March of last year, California Supreme Court Justice Catherine Werdegar announced her retirement, and she officially stepped down last August. So for almost 1 year now, her seat has been open, at times filled by a rotation of other judges. And here's where it gets a little bit complicated. Governor Brown has delayed filling the seat. At the same time, he's asking the court to speed up its review of a major pension reform case. So we've asked attorney David Ettinger to walk us through the situation. He's an appellate specialist who writes the blog At the Lectern, and he's joining us by phone from L.A. Mr. Ettinger, thanks for joining us on Insight.
It's good to be with you, Beth.
How unusual is it that Governor Brown hasn't filled this open seat yet?
Well, his prior vacancies have taken a while to fill, but not nearly this long. So it's pretty unusual.
So let's get to why he hasn't. What political strategy is at play here?
Well, I don't know whether I'd call it a political strategy, but and nobody seems to have any inside information outside of the governor and maybe a couple of his advisors. But some of the speculation of late has been that he might be wanting to appoint one of his close advisors, and including his wife might be one of the ones who he wants to appoint. And he might be waiting for a couple of reasons. One is that if he waits to make the appointment until after the middle of August, the appointee would not have to face election until 2022 instead of this coming November. So that's one factor. And another factor might be that he wants to keep the advisor on his staff for as long as possible as his term is winding down.
So as a court watcher, David, what's your reaction to the speculation that Ann Gust Brown might be appointed to the high court?
Well, the governor has a history of making outside-the-box appointments that also turn out to be excellent choices, and that would seem to appointing Ann Gust Brown would seem to fall into that category. It would certainly be outside the box. From what I've read about her, she sounds like she'd be very qualified and a good justice.
Meanwhile, the open seat has left six justices, and in some cases that would mean a 3-3 split in cases. I did mention this rotation of fill-in judges, so would you explain how that happens?
Sure. The court has a system for appointing temporary justices. They're called pro tem justices, and they are drawn from the Court of Appeal. There are somewhere over 100 Court of Appeal justices around the state, and the Chief Justice will take mostly on an alphabetical basis the justices from the Court of Appeal, as long as those Court of Appeal justices have been on the Court of Appeal for over a year. So it's generally alphabetical. That doesn't always happen. Sometimes a justice might not be available to sit on a particular case, and they'd be put on a later case. But that's generally how the system works.
I have read a number of your blog entries, and in the entry from July 18th, you do say that this long vacancy on the court has interfered with the work to some degree. How so?
Well, that's based on comments made by the Chief Justice herself, Chief Justice Tani Cantil-Sakaue. Back in December, she was quoted as saying it's difficult to operate without a seventh justice, and she said some cases were stuck due to 3-3 ties of the six regular justices on the court now. So if they don't have four justices agreeing on a particular disposition, they probably are not going to set the case for oral argument, which, and the argument has to precede the decision.
So now we come to the specific situation that I referred to, the governor asking the state Supreme Court to speed up a review of a lawsuit that challenges the 2013 Public Employee Pension Reform Act. Before we jump into the nuts and bolts of the process, would you explain this case a bit?
Well, I don't know. I'm not an expert on this at all, on the pension issues, but I do know it involves what's called the California rule, which, as I understand it, means that California workers are entitled to the pension benefits that were in existence when they were hired. And I believe the legislature passed, at Governor Brown's urging, some statutes to modify pension rules because of anticipated pension costs coming up in the future that could be debilitating for public entities.
We have then the governor not filling the open seat, but asking the court to expedite the pension cases, in fact, and the Chief Justice saying, we're already pushed and stressed because of the open seat. So what's going on here, David, and what's at stake for the governor?
Yeah, well, it is a bit ironic that the governor is keeping the Supreme Court waiting, keeping them shorthanded for almost a year now. And then he, on the other hand, he's saying, hurry up on this one case, it's important to me. I mean, standing alone, the request for preference and a quick disposition of the pension case seems like a reasonable request to make to the court, and it might be honored. It might move the case more quickly than it otherwise would. But just juxtaposed to his keeping the court shorthanded for so long, keeping the court waiting, it's just an ironic situation. And I have to mention there are two different pension cases. He made the request in one particular case called Cal Fire, but there's also another case, Alameda County Deputy Sheriff's Association, that's also raising pension issues. That's before the court, and not fully briefed yet. So it's possible the court might want to wait for that second case, the Alameda County case, to be fully briefed before it sets either one of them for argument.
Now I'm going to take us a little further into the weeds, and that is, if the court waits and puts the case on the back burner, and Governor Brown is no longer in office, and the governor has already replaced the attorney general in this case, and the governor's office has assumed a responsibility for it, but if he's no longer in office, do you know what happens, David? Does the case get kicked back to the attorney general's office, or does the new governor assume a role of responsibility?
That I'm not sure of. I would assume that it would stay within the governor's office, since the governor took over that case. And it would mean that whoever the new governor is might be able to make a change in legal position.
Exactly. You know,
that's just speculation on my part. But
it is valid to say that the governor's successor might be less willing to challenge organized labor or challenge the situation with pensions.
That's true. And that may be why the present governor is asking for a faster hearing on the Cal Fire case.
You're listening to attorney David Ettinger. He is an appellate specialist who blogs about the California Supreme Court for At the Lectern, practicing before the California Supreme Court. He has briefed and argued dozens of appeals, including more than a dozen arguments before the California Supreme Court. Can we go back to that point about the speculation of the next justice to be named to the California Supreme Court. And the fact that justices end up on the ballot, there are two who will be on the ballot this November. What's your thought about having elections for state Supreme Court justices?
Well, the California system is certainly better than a number of other states, because in California we do not have contested elections for Supreme Court or for Court of Appeal justice positions either. No lawyer or judge can take out papers and run against a sitting Supreme Court or Court of Appeal justice. Rather, those justices, when their 12-year terms are expiring, their names go on the ballot, and the voters are asked, should this judge have another 12-year term, and you just vote yes or no on that justice. So that's certainly better than the states where there are contested two candidates, sometimes partisan elections for court positions. It definitely reduces the politicization of those appellate judicial elections. That being said, I for one would favor getting rid of the elections altogether. There have been rare instances where judges have not been retained, just the prospect of having that, just the threat of not being retained, I think can create a negative influence on how the justices might be looking at a particular case. A former Supreme Court justice, California Supreme Court Justice Otto Kaus, said that these retention elections are like shaving in the bathroom with an alligator in your bathtub. He said, you always know it's there, that's the famous analogy that was made. And I would favor taking the alligator out of the bathtub and letting the justices not have to worry about being retained.
I think most of us would prefer an alligator not to be in the bathtub, actually.
Yes. Yes.
Sorry, I had to play with that idea.
That was Justice Kaus's point, I think.
My mind is still rolling around the suggestion, the speculation of Anne Gust Brown becoming a justice on the California Supreme Court. So the way this could play out, and we're just speculating here, is if Governor Brown waited until after August 30th to make the appointment, what's the process for her being confirmed or put in place, whatever the state process is? And then she wouldn't have to be on the ballot for that retention election until, I understand, 2022, correct?
That would be correct. The process for any Supreme Court appointment or nomination by the governor is that the appointee or nominee has to appear before the Commission on Judicial Appointments, which is a 3-member panel made up of the Chief Justice of California, the Attorney General of California, and the senior presiding justice on the California Court of Appeal. So those three justices hold a hearing with the nominee or appointee, and then vote on whether to confirm the appointment or nomination. And so that's how Anne Gust Brown would get on the court, or whoever the appointment is.
Is there another name besides hers that's been high on the list?
Well, the original list, when the vacancy first opened up, was, the front runner speculation was about Presiding Justice Jim Humes on the California Court of Appeal in San Francisco. He was a close a deputy to Governor Brown when Governor Brown was Attorney General of the state. Humes would also be the first openly gay California Supreme Court justice. And he's also an extremely well-regarded jurist. So he was considered a front runner. But there doesn't seem to be a reason why he would be, why the governor would have waited this long if he were going to appoint Justice Humes. Another name that I've heard recently, again, based on no inside information whatsoever, is the senior advisor to the governor who's in charge of judicial appointments. And his name is Josh Groban, not the singer, but the same name. And he would also be one of those outside-the-box appointments that would probably be make an excellent justice.
Hmm. So we'd have to say, oh, that Josh Groban.
Yes, exactly.
Make a clarification. By the way, just to go back to the pension cases, I do want to note that it's been written that Governor Brown at a news conference has said that he does anticipate the court is going to uphold his law, that he anticipates that the California rule will be voided and that future leaders will be able to adjust pension benefits. There's a lot at stake. That could be posturing, but these are hugely significant cases for the present and maybe more importantly for the future.
They are indeed, and that's why the court might take this case up more quickly than it otherwise would. However, if for any reason they are split 3-3, the six justices, permanent justices on the court, I think they would probably want to wait and not have the a pro tem, a temporary justice, be the deciding vote on that case.
David, before I let you go, I want to really switch gears here and ask you about the court's decision to take something off the ballot, and that is the Three Californias initiative. We haven't really talked about that initiative on Insight, so you'll have to explain it just a bit, but it was notable that that's not going to be a question for voters.
It's at least not on this November's
right,
ballot.
Right, not this November.
Yeah, the court certainly left open the possibility of it being on a future ballot once they examine the validity of the initiative, whether it's a valid thing for topic for an initiative measure. And they did something quite similar just 4 years ago. There was a measure that was put on the ballot by the legislature to encourage a constitutional amendment to overturn the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Citizens United concerning campaign finance. And the Supreme Court took that off the ballot for which it had qualified. It then, at its normal pace, well, a little bit expedited, I'd say, but in a more leisurely pace, decided the case on its merits, said the ballot measure was fine, and it appeared on a ballot 2 years after it was originally scheduled to be on the ballot. So there's still the possibility that the Three California initiative could be on a later ballot.
If it passed, I'd be talking to you from a different state right now, wouldn't I?
Not as I understand it. As I understand it, that would only be the first of a number of steps towards Three Californias, because California can't unilaterally break itself up. Congress has to get involved as well.
Okay. And that was, by the way, Proposition 9, and there will be more discussion about it. David, we've covered a lot. I just want to ask before we close if there's anything else that is really piquing your interest in terms of watching the California Supreme Court right now, and anything you want to tell us to keep our eyes on.
Well, besides the pension cases, another case that's very significant that the court has agreed to hear concerns an examination of California's cash bail system. That's a case called In re Humphrey. And considering whether when a judge sets a bail, the judge has to take into account whether the defendant can afford to pay the bail. And that could be a very significant groundbreaking decision.
All right. Well, we may check back in with you about that one. But meanwhile, thanks so much for your time and for all your observation and information about the court. I appreciate the conversation, David.
It's been a pleasure.
That is David Ettinger. He is an appellate specialist. We're going to post a link to his blog. It's titled At the Lectern. And this is Insight on Capital Public Radio.